Hello, I'm William Lever from Toonami Squad. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm Nick with the Geekly Grind.
Hello.
I'm Patrick, also with the Geekly Grind.
Hi, my name is Crystal, and I'm with the Kitsune Network.
Hi, I'm Sean. I'm with Mishima, and my own website, Sean Xlong. This is my buddy, Josh.
Cameraman.
My name is Jonathan Belshan, host of the college anime radio show, Otaku Hourly.
Hi, I'm Robbie with Geek HQ, and thank you for being here.
Of course, thank you. Very nice to meet you all. Thank you.
I guess I'll start with the next question, or the first question, actually. Let's see. After working on My Hero Academia, Two Heroes movie, are you hoping for a sequel?
I would love to do not necessarily even a sequel, just more movies in the hero universe. What I love so much about the opportunity for them to make this movie is that it expands the universe in such a cool way. Now we find out that there's this whole super science community that's been around this whole time making wild gadgets and everything, which is only something we've had a little taste of around the school. So yeah, I just want to see more characters, more of everything. What I really love in My Hero is when we get the arcs that build the universe up, like the sports festival, where we get to see everyone else who isn't in the main class get to show off and prove why they are also super. So just more of that, please.
Yeah. I'm actually going to default to Patrick for the questions.
So working on Two Heroes, I mean, obviously that's a movie. How does that differ for doing just weekish episodes?
Sure, it's sort of different to look at than your weekly sort of arcs in the show, because you have 2 hours essentially of a build up to the climax and everything, and trying to make the narrative cohesive in that way and still feel engaging is, you know, it's I guess 4 times as difficult. but yeah, it's the movie, because it's sort of such a celebration of the universe and the show so far, goes through a lot of pains to bring a lot of characters in and give them time in the limelight, whereas not every arc gets to focus on the same characters in the show, which is a shame, but it also sort of makes you, you know, it compels you to keep watching so that they do get their moment in the sun. But yeah, it's just sort of a different kind of story, which is sort of freeing because it exists and it subsists in its own little cinematic universe. But it's just cool to be able to tell something a little different.
Let me start off this question by saying it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
With that being said, can you tell me more about your character Deku and, if anything, how you can relate to him?
Absolutely. What really drew me to Deku initially, and has continued to compel me, is that Deku has always felt like a very real portrait of mental health growing up. He deals with, I think, very relatable issues. He struggles with his self-worth. He's trying to forge his identity in this like super heroic society, and he's dealing with inadequacy as people tell him that he is less than what he dreams he can be. So I think on one level or another, everyone can relate to feeling that growing up in some capacity. So I have just really tried to tap into that and portray that as honestly as I can. And I think that is what has drawn a lot of people to root for Deku, because they feel like someone in this class is someone that they can relate to as well. And that helps you root for them in a way that, you know, we wish that we had someone rooting for us in that way growing up.
I'm Shelby.
Nice. Hello. Likewise.
So it's kind of going off the same question. Deku is a new kind of protagonist, sort of, because he starts off the series unapologetically crying, getting hurt and everything like that, but he's never seen as less masculine. In especially shonen anime, hyper-masculinity is such like a big barrier that's taken so long to cross, and Deku is sort of like kicked and jumped over that barrier.
Yeah.
How do you feel about like what that has done for like equality and how men can be seen and how men can be vulnerable and still extremely masculine and worthy of being a strong main character?
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah, Deku, I mean, he is, as you said, at his core emotionally vulnerable. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and I think that's so beautiful because his friends love and accept him for that. It's never portrayed as a weakness. His crying has never gotten in the way of him being a hero. It's out of gratitude and out of just having to vent these strong and powerful feelings that he has. And he also, you know, it doesn't take away from the times when he has to really steel up and make the big fight. So it's just great to play a character who feels so real and is so honest with himself and is able to adequately, like, express himself and identify what he's feeling in these moments. I think it's great to be able to root for someone like that, and I hope that it provides more emotional literacy for folks who get to see it.
Uh-huh. Definitely keep it with the emotional theme. There's been so many great emotional moments in the show, and that's one of the best parts of the show. Is there any emotional moments in the series that has stuck with you? And there's been, like, every episode has some great moment that we all love.
there are plenty. There are some episodes I've had to swear off because I cannot watch them without crying. Like, yeah, gosh. I mean, of course, the theme of the sports festival fight with Todoroki was really beautiful. The feeling of that you are you're your own person, and what has come before you doesn't identify who you are, and you don't have to be ashamed of where you've come from. There was a moment recently where after All Might had the fight with All For One, Deku realized that he has sort of lost his emotional crutch. Now he has to shoulder the burden that used to belong to the most powerful man on the planet. I think that's very difficult. That's a very, like, real coming of age theme. And then there was, oh gosh, I'm gonna cry thinking about it.
It's all good. We're all here.
Shortly after that, on the beach where they first they handed me something to cry into.
Yeah.
There was a scene on the beach where they first, like, trained together, mm-hmm. and they met up again after the fight where All Might had lost his power.
Yes,
and
Texas Smash.
Right. All Might basically said, I'm sorry, I'm now dedicating myself to your betterment. I sort of lost sight of that in the beginning, and I've let you get hurt and let myself get hurt because of it. So I apologize. And to hear, you know, Superman...
Yeah.
Say I'm sorry is really, really touching, I think. So I can't ever watch those again.
I know.
Too many emotional scars.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what the corgi's for. He's
like, oh, thank you, please. I need you. Now more than ever.
Hold on, I'm going to pet him for now. Okay, my emotions are here.
I'm not making chances. These are just very fashionable.
Yeah. In this roundtable, we were talking about, like, how much Deku means to you, and I actually want my audience and I would like to know. May you please tell us your voiceover origin story? Like, how did you get into voice acting?
Sure. I've been acting since. Well, I've been. My parents did acting and local, like, community theater and dinner theater before I can even remember, basically. So I was always sort of tapped into that. That community and that sort of the theatrical world, I guess. And then I sort of started to pursue it on my own. I did, like, children's theater growing up. I went and I did a intensive, like, performing arts high school program, carried it on into college. And then there was sort of a point, you know, where I had to start making some calls about my career. I started to wonder, okay, so where can I actually take this and leverage it into something that I can make a living out of and feel still fulfilled in artistically? So I didn't think maybe, you know, packing up everything and trying to make it big on Broadway was especially responsible. So I looked and tried to find other avenues of expression that I enjoyed. The cartoons and the video games that meant so much to me growing up and brought me so much joy, that I thought was a wonderful avenue to take everything I'd learned from stage and to sort of use that to express these cool and unique characters that you don't really get to see in plays or musicals or anything. So I really started to pursue that and study it. And through college, I met some folks in my major programs who passed my information along to Funimation. And then they called me in for, like, a general audition. It wasn't for a show in particular, but they were sort of starting to expand their acting troupe, is how I like to think about it. their summer stock. And after that, they must have liked the cut of my jib, and they kept calling me back in.
Alright, so Hero Academia is an incredibly popular anime right now.
Yeah.
It's big both in America and in Japan. Were you prepared for that when you got the role? And you know, what has it been like to see this show just continue to grow?
It's amazing, and yeah, it has become such just an international phenomenon. And that's been something beautiful, is getting to travel this summer with sort of some of the Japanese cast and crew. We did Anime Expo with Yamashita-san, and I got to, you know, pick his brain a little bit about the process and what he likes and what his favorite foods are. Also with Horikoshi-sensei at San Diego Comic-Con, we got to, and being able to be a part of exposing them to their international audience, which, you know, they sort of understand exists, but they get to see them just crazy and wild and energetic and just so passionate for something that they work really hard on. I think that's really cool, too, just to bask in that experience. There were sort of whispers around the studio when they got the rights to the property and auditions sort of started that it was going to be a pretty big deal. But we didn't really see the repercussions of that popularity until, I think, this year especially, when they announced the movie, they announced the video game, they put it on Toonami so that it exposed to a whole new audience. It's taken a little time, but now I think, and the cast and I all sort of realized it at the same time and looked at each other like, oh, this has become a really, really big deal. Mm-hmm. And it's always been a project that's been very special to me. I identified that it was something very, you know, unique and lives in its own world right away, pretty much. So I've always tried to just be as honest as possible with the material, glean as much as I can from the original cast and their how they set the tone for the story. And I just want to, you know, I want to pass the story on to more people, and just to be a part of that is really rewarding.
Speaking of Toonami and
you
other
skipped
shows,
my question.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It's my turn.
I'm just going to shift gears a little with this question. How was your overall experience voicing Popuko in the first episode of Pop Team Epic?
Literally absurd. It was amazing. I mean, I really love that show. I you see like the reaction images get posted online and this and that. So when they announced the anime, I think I'm not alone in saying I'm very curious in how they're going to approach it. When the director got a hold of the project, he sort of told me cryptically, like, I've got something fun for you to do next week. Oh, what does that mean? What doesn't it mean? It was a very unique experience because, as you probably, I'm sure you know, that it's the same episode told twice with a male and a female cast, and I had the distinct honor of being the first of the female cast. There are no other male cast members of the of that side of the show except me, which is awesome. I love that. And he sort of paired people together based on their like relationships in other shows as well. Like I was with Colleen Klinkenbeard, who's my peepamy, who you know, she's been directing me in My Hero for years. So you know, to get to act off of her in something that's just hilarious, mm-hmm. was a lot of fun. And then we also got to reference in that episode was Chris Sabat and Ian Sinclair. And they, of course, they were off the wall, but every line that I did, we would reference Sabat and see what he did, and see, yeah, because we didn't want it to be the same exact delivery every time. We wanted to do something more zany and crazy and sort of show off what every individual performer can do. And as the show went on, I think there was more of that sensation. So it's just really satisfying to get to work on something that lets you flex and you don't really know what's coming next, and you just get to enjoy and try things and see where it lands.
Awesome.
So you mentioned Colleen a little bit there, and obviously she worked with you for a majority of My Hero so far, but recently she's been working on the movie, which then directing fell to Clifford Chapin. So what's it like working differently with two different directors? What would you say is stands out between the two of them?
That's a very good question. And luckily for them, the Cliff has been Colleen's assistant director, or that's how he started out with ADR directing. So he studied under the school of Colleen. So there's at least that sort of narrative cohesion when he gets to step in and do the project. But he's just as big a fan of the show as she is. She adores it. He really loves it. And so when we're going in week to week, he's able to reference the same emotional beats and everything. He's very astute at looking back at the older material and seeing how that relates to what's being said now and like what the emotional weight of something in season three means because of what something in season one was said. So they just have very good heads on their shoulders. And of course, because Cliff and I get to hang out a little more, I guess the atmosphere is a little more relaxed, but we're both, pretty committed to getting it right and getting it done. And so it isn't that different, but also he talks a little bit more about Bakugo than
of course.
Than Colleen does.
It's funny because that's kind of translated to your interactions online a little bit.
Exactly.
You poke fun at each other. And he recently played a trick on you in the recording studio.
Oh, that was a trick on Colleen. Because she, I think, hasn't seen how our relationship has blossomed in that sort of like teasing way. So when she handed the keys over to Cliff for that episode, he was like, I'm going to have a little fun. Because every episode, she will be the final, she has the final eyes on it. Like, she sees it no matter what. She'll have to sit down and watch what everyone did. So he left all those bombs in for her to see and be like, no, 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 no.
We have time for one more question.
Do you guys have a...
With that being said, what has been your experience working on the My Hero Academia series?
It's just been infinitely rewarding. I love being able to tell such a real, honest, emotional story. It's been great getting to now travel and share my passion with people who are also as equally or more so passionate about the project than I am. And the more I get to talk to folks and see who their favorite characters are and see who their favorite relationships are, the more it deepens my understanding of the material. So it's really amazing. And to get to share that sort of international love for the series with everyone is really, really great.
We're gonna go into the other room to take photos.
Yeah, let's do it.
Off the record, but you have any favorite conspiracy theories?
I
let you down.
Oh gosh.